this life. God blesses us through the power of the Christ. The power of the Christ is life. Our expression of life is the glory of God. We are the offspring of God's love, blessed by His grace. Let's sit in the comfort, healing energy of God's grace for a few moments in silence. As we break the silence and bring our attention and consciousness back into the moment in the room, please join me in sharing gratitude for this moment and sharing gratitude for each one of you. Gratitude for your presence, gratitude for your expression of love, and gratitude for your expression of the Christ. Let us all embrace the healing power of God's grace, and likewise, let us extend the power of grace to others. Amen. The reason for holidays. Really, I mean, holidays and big events is, I mean, we kind of measure the cadence and rhythm of life by these things. How come? I mean, Easter was last week. How many of you think or believe Easter is kind of a big deal? Yeah. I mean, I was at a Christmas Eve service at St. Mary's in Hudson, and, you know, the priest was talking about how the only time he sees this many people is on Easter and Christmas. So I guess both of those days are big days. I think Easter's a bigger day, though, for a Christian. How come? Well, candy. Bunnies, apparently, are a big part of it. Eggs. You can see the egg connection. Rebirth and all that. Crosses. Gone. Salvation? Anybody? Okay. So, we do these rituals. Some of them are religious rituals, like Christmas and Easter and St. Basil's Day and things like that. But we also have big events, births, marriages, engagements, baby showers, funerals, and all these big events. Oh, don't forget, this will come back, high school reunions. So why do we do these rituals? Well, one is we use them as a way to demonstrate what matters to us, what's important. When we do that, it's a time where we both remember our beliefs. Maybe we even requalify them or explore them, look a little deeper into them. We do public demonstrations of our beliefs. We get community connection. Usually when we celebrate Easter, we're with others. Not just Easter, but we celebrate. And there's just a general quickening of consciousness around these events because everyone that's involved gets focused on the event. And that raises, it doesn't raise consciousness, but consciousness is actually always high. But it raises our awareness and our focus on the consciousness. And a lot of times we'll use these events to focus our energy on achieving goals. Because it seems like big events create incentive to do something with a sense of urgency or a sense of purpose. You know, I encourage people to do things with a sense of urgency, but without being urgent. So stay calm, but stay on purpose. You know, one thing I noticed in my life is that I never see the cobwebs in my kitchen until I'm sitting at the table having coffee with a friend. Oh dear, maybe I should have had a sense of purpose about preparing the house for their arrival. This fits into the high school reunion. I mean, I think this changes as we get further along on our journey and maybe love ourselves a little more, but well, I can remember the fitness regimen I went into before my first high school reunion. You know, I had to go back there and show those people I wasn't slacking. And same thing sometimes for weddings, either yours or another's, because it's sort of like the cobwebs in the kitchen, you know. I'm comfortable in my own thing, but when I'm going to be publicly exposed, display might be the word I was looking for, I'm like, oh yeah, I better trim things up a bit. So we get focused on doing some things. Like I said, we might fix up the house for guests or a big party. Graduation party's coming for Noah, May 25th. Anybody who's in the neighborhood can drop by. That's a Saturday, Memorial Day. I've been working in the yard for weeks already. Probably by the time the party comes, everything will already be done and the weeds will grow again. You know, sometimes you just get to go out and get a new outfit for a big event, right? So that's another reason that we love holidays and big events, because it gives us an opportunity to exaggerate for effect. You know, literally a chance to dress up. Now, some people dress up, but we all dress up every day. Whatever our look is, you know, we demonstrate it by what we choose to put on our bodies. But, yeah, big events, we usually spruce it up a bit, you know, maybe a little more time getting ready, might even shave, you know, take that annual bath. But we dress up and we try to create special moments, you know, a little bit out of the ordinary. Like we're reaching a little more for these holidays and big events. We also can use them as a good reason to push our boundaries. You know, like we might try to do something special to honor a big birthday, like you turn 60 and you climb Mount Katahdin in Maine. Just to prove you still can, or at least hope that you still can. I know a woman who took a hot air balloon ride to celebrate her 90th birthday. You know, so sometimes we just use the energy. And remember, I mentioned earlier that around big events, there's a quickening of energy. And you can build off that and leverage off that and ride the wave of it. I've run a couple of half marathons, so has Nikki. And, you know, you train, and boy, training alone is a lonely journey. But, boy, when you get to the venue and you get your bib and you're getting into the corral and you're getting ready to start that race, I mean, there's such a quickening of the energy. Anybody who's ever experienced anything like that, whether it's a race or a walk-a-thon or whatever works for your experience, you feel that and you run faster, for example. I know I do. I run a lot faster, especially for the first mile. And then reality sets in, but still, I finish faster. So there's a lot that goes into the energy we create for these big moments, and we do raise ourselves up. Probably the craziest example of this is what fashion shows. And I'm not talking about Zoolander alone. Maybe some of you have seen the movie Zoolander, but I just, this is one of my favorite things to example hyperbole. Just how crazy is the Milan fashion show. Like, and you've heard me say this before probably, but I just never see anybody over at Crocker Park buying a dress with wings attached. And yet you'll see the model coming down the runway with wings, and everything's being exaggerated for effect. That's why we like these big events. Arthur Clarke said, "The only way to discover the limits of the possible is to go beyond them into the impossible." Interesting. When I first read that, I was like, wait a minute. How can that be true? But then I thought, it really is true. Because we think in our minds what's possible and what's impossible. You know, for a long time, no one could run a 4-minute mile. It was impossible. Doctors would write papers on how the heart would explode in the human body if you pushed it that hard. And then somebody went and did it. And suddenly it was possible, and a lot of people did it. Now it's, I don't know, 3 minutes and 40 seconds or something is the world record. It's quite. But I think the bottom line about why we do these big events, these holidays, and including spiritual holidays, it's because they satisfy the three requirements of happiness. Something to look forward to, something meaningful to do, and someone to share it with. So we do that. We did it last week with Easter. But now what? Because if we put all this energy into these big events, we really do go the extra mile. What's the next day like? Wow, I'm so tired. Of course, we tell ourselves that. It's probably not actually true. Well, sometimes it's true. I mean, the physical part, for sure. But, you know, because, I don't know, when I was in college, it was especially strong because we always had this thing called finals week. And so, like, everything built to a crescendo, and the productivity curve looked just like that, all semester long, week before finals. And then, oh, and then, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks, I'd forget that I was even in school, and then Christmas would be over, and it'd be like, oh, boy, I'm going back. And so that type of irregular cadence is not what we're looking for in our spiritual life. You know, we want more consistency. We want to have every day be like Easter, for example. Maybe we can dress more casually. But how do we keep that going? And let's focus on what Easter means. Because remember, the three things that we need are meaning, something to look forward to, and someone to share it with. So let's focus on the meaning part. I think the blessing of Easter is forgiveness. Some might say the redemption of our souls. And the freedom that we experience is consequent to the cleansing of, for lack of a better word, our transgressions, and a hope for a better future from that reset that we get. Close? Is this what Easter's about? Essentially, forgiveness. Wipe the slate clean, move forward. So what does this benefit that we get from Easter cost us? Well, in truth, and now when I say in truth here, I'm talking about capital T truth, which is the metaphysical Christianity that we associate with unity. So in truth, what the benefit of God's grace costs us is nothing. Nothing at all. It's a gift from God. He even says that in the Bible. We are saved by the grace of God. Now, that saving thing is a little bit tricky, and I want to talk about that, but I want to first emphasize that forgiveness is a gift that should cost us nothing. So in truth, which is new thought, and again, these words we throw around, the word new is misleading. Because the only thing new about new thought, or unity, is that it's a different interpretation of the insights of Jesus of Nazareth, you know, about the nature of God. there's nothing new about it. It's just a new way of interpreting it, as opposed to traditional Christianity. And I'll tell you that comparison is not the best thing, but I think in this case it might be necessary to just show the contrast of a traditional Christian, which, by the way, is not that old. Some say, well, we need to get back to the basics. Well, a lot of the tenets of what's called traditional Christianity really developed in the 18th and 19th centuries through a couple of things called Great Awakenings. But so it's a little bit muddy. But in traditional Christianity, the cost of forgiveness, in my opinion, is an inferiority complex. In traditional Christianity, we must submit to the idea of being born in sin and therefore in need of salvation. And there's a great big story, a great big story about this. In fact, I saw a movie once called The Greatest Story Ever Told, and it was about this great big story. And it's based on this idea of an all-powerful and yet unsatisfied creator who requires a blood sacrifice to redeem the inadequacy of his creation. Now think about that for a second. We're inadequate, he created. Is this about him or us? We could talk for years about these concepts, right? An all-powerful and yet unsatisfied creator who requires a blood sacrifice to redeem the inadequacy of his creation, lest we become servants under his nearly equal opposition. Now, I know that that whole thing is not that simple. And I also know that some people would call me a heretic for even saying what I've said so far. So let's just forgive me of that and focus on what I would like to focus on, which is that we are not born in sin. We are born in magnificence. And we have nothing to feel inadequate about. Yeah, we have plenty of things that we do that are open areas of improvement. And that's the journey of life. That's being mortal. That's being new. We are born mortal. But we are born in magnificence, created in the glory of God, in the image of God, who, by the way, is one power, not two. I'm not afraid of Satan. Satan's just an idea. We are expressions of the Christ. So we say that. Every week I'm here. We affirm it. We pray about it. We sing about it. But do we believe it? And I say yes, partially. Partial credit on this one. Because inferiority, that idea of our inferiority, has left a mark. And it shows up in the way we experience life, and the way we experience life, especially with each other. So Dr. Rudolf Dreikers wrote a speech called The Courage to be Imperfect. And in that speech, he talks about how we do try to, in social engagement, compensate for our feeling of inferiority. And at one point in the speech, he says, I don't feel very good about who I am, but at least I know one thing, I'm better than you. Okay? And so it sets up this nature where we're tempted and often compare ourselves to others. We're in rivalry with others. We get into scarcity consciousness about, well, if they have it, can I have it too? I got to fight with them. You know, all hostility comes from fear. So this is part of the human dynamic. We complain, we blame. And Alfred Adler, who was, you know, the basis of Dr. Dreikers was an Adlerian psychiatrist. And Alfred Adler said that all complaints are complaints against one's own character. what that's thinking. So whatever I'm complaining about, I'm really talking about myself and what I believe. And it doesn't feel too good to have the garbage in my backyard, so I go out there every day and throw it over the fence into my neighbor's yard and try to convince myself that it was his garbage all along. We do this with each other emotionally. Not all the time, thank God, because we're not always distracted by our fear. We're often driven by our love, which is a very different experience. But this, if you accept this idea that I got as a very young person when I was quite impressionable, I'm still impressionable, but back then I was really trying to sort it out. I remember having some conversations with God about, wait a minute, what about this? What about this? Do I have free will or is it predestiny? And if it's predestiny, why don't you let me in on the secret so I don't have to agonize through this so much? I mean, I had some tough times as a young kid, but maybe y'all did. But if you accept this idea that you're born in sin, that just leads you to judge yourself as being less than, inferior, inadequate. It leads to you wanting to at least try to be better than your brother. So we end up being distracted by all this. And the distraction prevents us from doing what we would do if we weren't distracted by it, which some people might be so brazen as to say, living your dream, expressing your dream. But sometimes when I hear a word like that, it's like, oh, that feels so good. What is my dream? But how about just enjoying the moment? That is a very good dream. Like, I just want to be present and happy right now. Or at least present in this moment, not off worrying about, oh, how will I defeat that enemy and how do I overcome that mistake that I made? All these things distract us. And we give into it because of fear, but just to be practical about it, it's easier to be an editor than an author. Okay? It's easier to be a critic than a creator. And the more critical we are, and the more we're editing others, telling us, oh, wow, you're doing, like maybe somebody's thinking, I know, Bruce is really failing today. Probably no one's thinking that. I know it's more praiseworthy, and oh my God, he's brilliant. And yeah, okay. Let's not be distracted by vainglory either. You paint yourself into a corner by being critical of those who risk being authors, of those who risk being creators. I've been in so many meetings where there's a big, big problem and no one has a good idea of what to do because we're all inadequate. I mean, we don't know everything, and in humility. So someone will finally, you know, take that risk of, well, we could do this. And I've just been amazed at how quickly the tone of the room can change to from silence to all kinds of people who have all kinds of reasons why that is a stupid idea, which really encourages the next person to come up with a thought. So we don't like that discomfort of sitting there feeling like, I don't know what to do. Or I don't know how to influence people to get them to understand me or see my point of view. And if you don't agree with me, you must be an idiot. I should probably tell you, but I won't. But I will tell my friend what an idiot you are. Do you see how we get engaged in this? And by the way, it's one of the like soap operas. It's drama. Drama is entertaining. For sure. It's a distraction. But it's not really very useful in the long run. And so, what do we do with this? Because the worst thing in the world is to get a bunch of new awareness and then have nothing to do with it, and then you just sit there feeling inadequate. So I've been practicing a concept that I call rapid forgiveness. And this is the idea I have when I answered the question, how can I make Easter every day? Not once a year where I go get cleansed, but like in every moment of my life. And I, as I've been practicing this over the last 2 weeks or so, I've noticed how often I need it. How often I get distracted by judging someone. And we can start with the simple stuff, like the person that cut you off on the highway. Or is going, forget that one, left lane Louis. You know what I mean by this? The people that get in the left lane and they go 5 or 10 miles per hour under the speed limit, which nobody obeys anyway, right? I have a sense of urgency then, right? But I'm getting urgent as well. Have a sense of urgency, don't get urgent. I'm like, get out of my way, right? Am I alone in this? And I recognize, okay, bam, great opportunity for rapid forgiveness. Just let it go. I'm on time. Well, usually. Sometimes, but maybe not that often. Maybe that's why I'm being urgent. You see, all complaints are complaints about one's own character. So it's not really about them. It's about, well, if I just started a little earlier, I wouldn't be trying to save every second I could on the way there. Never happens to me. I'm just making these up so that they can get understanding for you. You see how I'm doing it right there? Right? If you were only as wise as me. What's that? I heard somebody say something. Hyperbole for sure. All right, so rapid forgiveness. So what do you do right away? Let it go. And so here's the benefit. Right in that moment, you have the opportunity to do something else. Don't worry. The next opportunity to complain or blame somebody is right around the corner. You know, you will find it. And so we get addicted to that because there's kind of a false power in it. Oh, don't even get me started on online stuff, right? Like, you think you're changing the world with those things? Just leave it go. Your best chance to influence anybody is to be the model of who you are. And either they agree with you or they don't. But it's up to them because they get to be who they are too. And we're all okay. The world's not ending. As George Carlin said, people keep telling me about the world being in trouble. The world's fine. It's been around for billions of years. It's people that got problems. God bless George Carlin. So, if you practice rapid forgiveness, and I've focused on the other, but the real part of it is to forgive me, to forgive myself. We use these judgments, I don't think it happens at a very conscious level, but we do this to actually protect us from the risk of failing at our dreams. Well, I would have done that, but, you know, I just have so much healing I need to do for all the mistakes I've made. You know, the best process of healing is to go do your dream and whatever needs to be healed will show up on the journey. So, what I want you to do is nurture and develop and express the gifts that you're born with. And we don't all have the same gifts. Caitlin Clark's got different gifts than me. She's more like Michael Jordan. She's amazing. But we're all amazing in our own way. And whatever those gifts are, if we stop the distracting, we can at least open up to being present to them. You've got to be patient with yourself, too. It's not like you're going to just all of a sudden have rapid dream making when you start practicing rapid forgiveness. It's just the first step. Because all of a sudden you're going to have that time where you say, oh, wait, I'm going to let that go. And then you got this space that opens up. You don't know what to do with it. Because you haven't been practicing being risking your life. Right? Risking your life, putting out who you are. Your unique gift. And so, let it unfold for you. Ask, listen, try. Rapid forgiveness in a reflexive mode is the moment I'm aware that I'm judging, blaming, criticizing, whatnot, the moment I become aware, just stop it. Now, my little voice will say,
You can't just stop it. You can't. You need to explain your context, and you need to adjudicate the reason. You need for this person to see. What an idiot they're being. That God gives us His grace as a gift, but we withhold our grace. I'll forgive you, but first you have to confess to me that you're an idiot and didn't see that I'm the one with the answer, right? So as soon as you confess, I'll forgive you. See how we play games like this? You may not see it, but let me know if you do. But so the reflex response is just, I'm aware of it, I let it go. The proactive step is to practice letting go of your judgments that you do in preparation for your next endeavor. And what this looks like is when I meet you in this moment, I want to see you exactly as you are, as you come to me, as you express in this moment, because right now you're choosing who you want to be, and I'm receiving that, versus all the preconceptions and notions I have about you that will try to paint you into a corner, and I will only then receive the experience of you that I want to see that validates my idea of what an idiot you are. Or whatever other judgment I have. I'm just using the idiot seems to be my word of the day. Remember, all complaints are complaints against one's own character. So here's the bottom line. We can have Easter every day, because this is practical Christianity that we're working on here. And so, like, yeah, Easter's great. I love Easter. I love Easter. Love the deviled eggs. But I love every day, too. And, like, it doesn't have to be epic. It's just, oh, wow, here's the things that I do that are actually the only gift I have that I have a lot of control over is how I spend my time, and especially how I spend my time in consciousness thinking about what I'm doing. And I can have a great experience if I choose to. I'm not going to distract myself with my fear and try to get involved in holding myself in blame or holding others in blame. I'm still doing this all the time, but I'm like, oh, wow, there it is. Let it go. It's not worth it. Nurture instead. Here's what you fill the gaps with, and that's what I'll leave you with. Nurture your gift. You might have to start by becoming more aware of what they are. But you all have something beautiful to offer, and we deserve it. I deserve you, and you deserve me. Nurture it, develop it, and express it. And if you want to call it living your dream, then live the dream. Thank you.
This is going to be another Karen Drucker dancing song for those of you who want to. Yeah, I couldn't hear the beginning, sorry. Thank you. I'm taking one small step instead of looking at the mountain. I'm taking one small step. It gets me closer to my goal. I'm taking one small step instead of sitting there, just sitting there looking at that mountain. Then it won't seem like I've got so far to go. Thank you for dancing. Taking one small step instead of looking at the mountain. Taking one small step gets me closer to my goal. Taking one small step instead of looking at the mountain. That won't seem like I've got so far to go. Well, I got dreams filled with passion. I've got fears. That seems to pop up in my way, but I got power that's deep inside my. what you know. And I take one small step instead of looking at the mountain. Taking one small step, just be closer to my goal. Taking one small step instead of looking at the mountain. That I won't seem like I've got so far to go. Well, I got off the track and I couldn't find my way back. When I looked inside, the truth there could not be denied. I was making it harder than it had to be. The question and the fight still found me. But I gotta take one small step instead of looking at the mountain. Taking one small step, just be closer to my goal. Taking one small step instead of looking at the mountain. Then I won't seem like I've got so far to go. And in time, I can't you see Jerry playing this? Thank you.